When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi there. Before this episode starts, just a note that we saw Barbie and Oppenheimer on the same day and released it all as one big episode, which is available on the feed. But we thought we would also split the Barbie and Oppenheimer sections into two different episodes for the convenience of people who for some reason might not want to watch one of the other. So this is the Oppenheimer only section. So you're going to be thrown into the middle of an episode here. But this is a Barbie free zone, all Nolan, all the time. Here we go. Welcome. If you have just skipped ahead from the time code and you don't want to watch Barbie and you're here for Oppenheimer. So the Barbie chat is finished. We're on to Christopher Nolan and Oppenheimer. Kathy, how are you feeling about this? Where are you at on the Oppenheimer thing?
I mean, I'm buzzed for it because I love huge budget movies. I love Cillian Murphy. Even though I don't always love or even particularly like Christopher Nolan films, I always enjoy the scale of his films. And actually, when we went to see Tenet a couple of years ago, the first film we watched after lockdown was one of my best ever movie experiences, just because we were so happy to be back in the cinema. So I'm really positively predisposed to this. I don't know anything about Oppenheimer. I actually had never heard of him before. So yeah, I'm kind of going in open-minded, and we're going to see it in the closest thing Cork has to an IMAX, which is a max with lots of X's at the end.
Yeah, it doesn't have the I.
Yeah, so as good as we can get it in Cork. Now, I am already highly stressed about the 3-hour runtime. It's actually making me anxious.
I'm stressed about finding parking. I think the whole of Cork has gone...
parking in there. How are you feeling anyway?
What's interesting is that I'm not particularly excited about this movie. But I'm excited because everyone else is excited.
Exactly, it's made me so excited.
Is it like, it's just such an event, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such an event. This never happens, right? When you book the cinema in Cork, you never have to worry about seats. I went to book it 5 days ago, and I basically got us the last two seats. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Did you hear of Oppenheimer before this film?
Yes.
Right.
I'm a lot more familiar with history than you are, it seems.
I mean, I know, I know there's an atomic bomb, I just didn't know who invented it.
Okay. Do you want me to mansplain to you what it's all about, or do you just want to watch the movie?
No, I just want to watch the movie, but I have the fear of a 3-hour film, and I really hope they've put an intermission
in it. Here's what I will say. I might alienate some people with this, but I think Christopher Nolan is a really overhyped director. I think he's a very good director, and I love that he's one of the few living directors who is the draw. Mm-hmm. People are turning up.
Yeah.
Not because they want to know the story of Oppenheimer. Yeah. Let's face it. They're showing up for Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
And that's awesome that a man can do that. And he has done a lot for cinema, mm-hmm. and is keeping it going and is fighting. So much so he left his deal with Warner Brothers, long-time deal, and went to Universal because of the whole HBO Max thing during the pandemic. He was not happy,
and he brought cinema back after the pandemic.
So I really admire the man, and I think he is a great director, and I love Interstellar and Inception, and I just think he's got this weird cult around him. He's got this kind of it's like a nicer version of the Zack Snyder toxic fan base, where there's just, you know, he's revered as this, do you know what I mean? And for me, I don't ever see that in his
movies. But it gets my back up as well when there's that kind of overly reverent predisposition to anything. It immediately gets my back up. So the Dark Knight thing is a bit like the Zack Snyder thing. You're getting too into fandom with comic books. So he's pulled it back now, and this is kind of for everyone else, right? World War II is the number one most bankable theme you can have in a film as well.
It's an interesting one. Yeah, I mean, I know he's going to deliver good entertainment. Cillian Murphy's awesome. This has got a great cast. I'm interested in the subject matter. Yeah. So yeah, let's
hit the max. Bye.
This is a national emergency.
Didn't need a charge.
I
the race against the Nazis. And I know what it means. If the Nazis have a bomb.
We have a 12-month head start.
18.
How could you possibly know that?
We've got one hope. All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here. A secret laboratory. Keep everyone there until it's done.
Let's go recruit some scientists.
Build a town, build it fast. If we don't let scientists bring their families, we'll never get the best.
Why would we go to the middle of nowhere for who knows how long?
Why? Why? How about because this is the most important thing to ever happen in the history of the world?
You're the great improviser, but this, you can't do in your head.
Are we saying there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world?
Chances are near zero.
Near zero.
What do you want from theory alone?
Zero would be nice.
Hello, we're back. We've seen Oppenheimer, but it was last night. We came out of that movie and we were just worn down from our double bill and three hours of Oppenheimer. It was just, we couldn't string a thought together, so we were like,
we'll pick it up in the morning, which we've done. It's early morning.
But we
morning.
Haven't talked about it.
No. Early morning, we're out for a walk by the sea, talk about Oppenheimer. Wow.
Well, so firstly, if it's your first time listening to our podcast, we're not going to spoil Oppenheimer, although I think if you know, you should know how it ends. I hope. But we will when we turn onto Spoiler Street by this lovely cliff walk. So, Kathy, what did you... I'm out of breath already.
Yeah, we're walking up a really steep cliff, by the
long,
way.
It's a long walk.
So I was incredibly blown away by this film, actually. Any listeners will know that I hate movies that are long. I tend to get really annoyed by long movies and feel like people should have cut loads of stuff out of them and that they drag and lag. I honestly feel like this 3 hours whizzed by. It's the most engaged I've ever felt in a movie of this duration. I was quite astounded by it. I feel like, and I mentioned I don't always like Christopher Nolan movies, albeit I always respect him as a director and a filmmaker. I think this is the best thing he's ever made. I think it's an astounding piece of work. I think it's probably one of the best films I've ever seen. I think Cillian Murphy is an astonishing screen presence. It was absolutely lovely for us watching the cinema, watching it in Cork, because Cillian Murphy's from Cork, and that just makes you really proud, even though his achievements have nothing to do with us, but like, it's really nice. And it was a totally packed cinema, and people actually clapped at the end.
How amazing, just to, like,
yeah, it was amazing.
In one day, we saw like two packed out screenings.
It was so nice.
Like we normally, for context, like, our cinemas are never booked out, ever.
We've often been the only people in them.
Yeah.
So it's just such a joy to be at a completely packed out
cinema. Is back.
Yeah. We mentioned that we were going to a Max screening, which is which they have in the Omniplex in Cork. It was fantastic. Like, the sound was incredible. The visuals were incredible. I'm so glad we went to that screening. But back to the film, yeah, Cillian Murphy is astonishingly good. Like, he's always good. I always rate him as one of the best actors. He is just phenomenal in this film. I mentioned at the beginning that I actually hadn't heard of Oppenheimer before. Like, I knew the kind of cut and thrust of some of this stuff, but by no means had any details. So I came at it with really no knowledge and just found the story fascinating. I kind of don't want to speak too much before spoilers on any particular elements of it, because I do think what's very interesting about the film is like how he chose to tell the story and the storytelling devices, and we'll probably get into that more in Spoiler Street. But I think it's Cillian Murphy's film. Like, it's got a fantastic supporting cast, but it's all about him, really. And what this film doesn't at all do, and what I had a slight concern in advance of, is, like, my least favourite genre is like what you call a biopic or a biopic,
yeah,
whichever way you say it.
I was going to say this exactly.
It can be very hit and miss if that formula works, if you're talking about a real person who lived in history and like how you tell a story. Now, and I think in Well, A just sorry. B just flew at us.
It flew onto the mic, so you probably all heard that as well.
But this is more the story. This is a science story, and it's a story of like the building of the atomic bomb. And I think that's why it's such a fascinating film. And then, of course, it's also about Oppenheimer. But even though he's the namesake and the star of it, it's actually a very scientific film. And I love watching all that development of all the scientific elements. But it just, the sound was incredible.
Oh my God,
yes. The score was incredible. The visuals were incredible. I just adored it. I absolutely adored it. Right, Dave.
Yeah, I'm just stunned by it. Like, I think it's a masterpiece. This is like, you know, we were saying at the beginning, it's like, while I do think there's a lot of hyperbole around Nolan sometimes, he is a proper cinema director, like whatever the, you know, definition of that might be. But like, he is telling stories with visuals and sounds, and in the most interesting way, and conveying ideas.
You could have heard a pin drop in the cinema.
Yeah, exactly. The tension that is wrung from a load of people in a tiny room interviewing, which is kind of one of the core foundations of this movie for 3 hours, is absolutely jaw-dropping. But to pick up your point, which I agree with, is that this is a biopic. And that is my least favorite genre of movies, because you tend to have a well-worn out story portrayed on the big screen by an actor doing a big Oscar-baity performance that is often just an over-the-top impersonation of a very eccentric figure, right? So in a weaker film, it would be Albert Einstein, like, who is a very eccentric character. Or I'm thinking of the Stephen Hawking one recently, or just people with like very like big sort of eccentric characters and big performances. But Robert Oppenheimer, as a person, as we are seeing him conveyed here, is kind of interesting, but very subtle and like somebody who doesn't quite express his emotions or feelings to the people around him.
Well, like, it makes sense. There are rooms full of scientists. Like,
But I disagree with you there, because the scientists around him are huge personalities. They're conflicting with each other. They're all arguing all the time. Robert Oppenheimer is someone who keeps his cards ridiculously close to his chest, and that is what is so impressive about this as a movie and as a performance by Cillian Murphy, because it's so. It's quiet and restrained, and it is.
I'm actually smiling just like thinking about how good Cillian Murphy is in
like,
this film.
Cillian Murphy like does so. He not only carries this film, he is this film. Yeah. Like this film, which I actually do think it has a great script, and I don't always rate Christopher Nolan.
Oh, it's a fantastic
and his
script.
Brother's writing either, but here is just like it is. He tells this story with a lot of complexity and detail in a very interesting way, in a way that he likes to play with time, and sometimes that can be gimmicky. Here it really adds something. Uh-huh. But Cillian Murphy's performance is the heart of this movie. It's the core of this movie. It is expressing a genius's, you know, conflict between, you know, trying to progress science and humanity and seeing things that normal people can't see, trying to live in a political context, and how those two kind of, you know, marry together, and also having to deal with literally the world changing because of their decisions.
Yeah, and that stuff, the philosophical elements of it are dealt with so well as well. And the history, it's such a moment in time, because you've got characters like Albert Einstein, Oppenheimer, Heisenberg. You've got all these. Even I was like, I've heard of these dudes.
The names of the scientists that are getting thrown out are they are household names.
It would have been like, what a time to be alive as a nuclear physicist or whatever the hell he was. What was he again?
But also it's like World War II and Hitler is happening at the same time. Like, it's an incredible time in history. But what's funny is that like, there's a line in this movie, which is in the trailer, by Matt Damon, who plays the, you know, the general in charge of the Manhattan Project, or Los Alamos. and he says, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened in the history of humanity. And when you see that in the trailer, and kind of when you see it here, it's so over the top you almost laugh.
But it's true.
But it is true. It actually is. This yeah. is, this changed, like, our, it opened a door by which we are now in a world living in the shadow of that decision. And nuclear threat and mutually assured self-destruction is a possibility that we live with in the background of our lives
yeah.
today. And that is a future that Oppenheimer was trying to reckon with in the moment of doing it, in the aftermath of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's something that is relevant to us today. And so yeah, I was honestly... Christopher Nolan just spun the whole thing into...
I think it's the best film he's ever made.
It's just like I was gripped. I thought the way he weaves all the different... like he's weaving like courtroom hearings, public hearings with smaller public hearings together, and they're bashing off against each other to create momentum and storytelling and it's just propulsive. I'm super impressed
and
by
that
it. It was amazing.
Every 5 seconds we were like, oh, there's that famous actor. Oh, there's that. Because obviously thousands and thousands of scientists work on something like this. And I think the film did a really good job of conveying the amount of people that, you know, it's not just one man who yeah. can do something like this. And they really wanted to convey how it's like thousands of people from the scientific community and outside of that coming together. And And nodding to that, I think the amount of characters who came and went, frankly, couldn't remember any of their names. But it's just like, oh, yeah. Oh, there's that famous act. I can't even think of any of them off the top of my head now. Well, there was like 40 of them.
We'll list some off in spoiler street because there were some surprises in there yeah. as well. But that's what I mean by this being like a better version of a biopic as well, because it kind of, a worse version of this would just, you know, just tell the story with the plot. And there is a bit of that where you've just have all these characters and coming in and like it just has to get through this stuff. But it's all grounded by Cillian Murphy, who is at the center of this whole thing, or Oppenheimer. And yeah, I mean, would we get to spoilers?
We go to spoilers. We both loved it anyway. Recommend. See it in the biggest screen you can watch it in with the best sound. If you're in Cork, go and see it in the Max.
The sound.
The sound, the score is just wonderful. I'm just so glad we saw it in that screen. And I think it's the kind of film, and everyone knows this, and this is why I do love Christopher Nolan. Everyone knows you need to see his movies at the cinema. And
he shoots on film. It
like,
looks
it would
like
be such a
gorgeous.
Waste. It would be such a waste to watch this film on a small screen. It truly would be.
Yeah.
It would still be a fantastic film, but it would be such a shame, and particularly, you know, the scene when the bomb goes off.
Well, let's.
You want to see that on a big screen, right?
Let's talk about spoilers now. Yeah. So spoilers for the movie Oppenheimer, and I guess spoilers for real life. those scenes that you're describing that just stood out to me, that you have to be, you just have to be in a silent room with your own thoughts and sharing Oppenheimer's horror for those to be truly effective. You can't really, I don't think this is going to have the same impact on the home setting when you watch this and then pause it and then talk about it and go for a cup of tea.
Yeah.
So the ones that stood out to me were, yes, the bomb scene is incredibly impressive, but for me the one that absolutely floored me, the scene that I'm still thinking about this morning, is the scene after the detonation, after the two bombs are dropped, where he gives that speech at Los Alamos.
Oh, that was
the victory speech in this tiny sort of basketball court, with all these people in the bleachers. It just I was floored. You've got Cillian Murphy
basketball
conveying
court? What?
there was a basketball net behind them. They'd set up...
oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, they'd set up... you know, it was obviously they'd built Los Alamos with facilities and things, right? That's where they were. You've got him conveying, he's saying these words, which is obviously a speech he's written.
He's like,
all about,
the Japanese sure didn't like it.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff, and it's his words are chilling. You can see he's battling with the reality of what he has contributed towards and what they have done, and but they don't just express that with Cillian Murphy's brilliant performance, Christopher Nolan and his team do this, like, what they do with sound here is particularly incredible. Suddenly the audience is quiet, then you're just hearing his words. Then suddenly sound comes ripping back in. You know, the sound, the way they layered in the sound of the stamping feet throughout the whole movie. You know, he's late. We see masterful. Him later where that stamping feet is following him throughout the whole movie.
And he starts imagining someone's, like, skin coming off and someone's crying. And I think they're the moments where you're like, Christopher Nolan is an absolute god of cinema. And the other scene that I think actually took a similar vibe for me was the scene where he's in being interviewed and his wife's behind him. And then he has to admit on this in his interview process that he spent the night with an ex-girlfriend, aka cheated on his wife.
Oh, and suddenly he's naked.
And suddenly he's naked because he's so vulnerable. She's sitting behind him. Then next minute, he's basically having sex in the room. And it's like the visual of like what his wife would be imagining in that moment. And then it was just like so well done. And I think and then afterwards he's like to her, but you knew already that I'd done that. And she's like, yeah, but now it's on the record.
Yes.
And I really felt that. And I actually do want to speak, even though we're like, it's all Cillian Murphy's movie. I think actually Emily Blunt in this got a really good character compared to, again, most biopics where there's like a very sidelined spouse. Like, she's obviously living in his shadow as the film's about him, but she had actually a very complex and interesting character. She had genuine input on him. Like, I love when he's like, we walked through fire together. Like, you got a real sense of their kind of dynamic over the years and how she challenged him. And like, I love that she got that moment at the end when she just refused to shake that guy's hand and Cillian Murphy shaked it because he can't help himself because he's like always trying to appease everyone. And I love that moment for her when she was just like, I'm not shaking that guy's hand.
Her moment with the prosecutor was pretty great.
Oh God, she was wonderful.
Where
she's
like immediately feels like under threat by him and then she bounces back.
She's so good. She had been a biologist, that's the thing. Like, he's with incredibly intelligent women as well. It's just that because she is a woman of the time and has married and had kids and now isn't like a scientist anymore.
Okay, I would like to talk about one thing I think was ambitious but didn't really work that well. And this is Christopher Nolan again playing with format and time. So he presents at the beginning, you know, there's half this movie's in black and white and half isn't. And there are two title cards that come up. One says one fusion, two fission. And this is a bit like what he did in Dunkirk, where he's trying to, you know, tell three different stories in, you know, three different ways. So, but I was unclear as to what he was trying to communicate, because in my head, it seemed like black and white equals the 50s. And color equals the past. But that is not the case, as
that's
I learned
I thought
two-thirds
too.
Into the movie.
But I think by the end, we both understood it. And I guess one of the things, and you mentioned Dunkirk about Christopher Nolan, that I like, is that he doesn't spoon-feed audiences and he leaves you work a lot of stuff out for yourself. But I was very confused when I realized that there's a face effectively four timelines, was it? But I got very confused by the kind of the other black and white one where Cillian Murphy was like debating at a table at Robert Downey Jr.
Yes, and because this is where
I
got
thought
me.
I thought that was in the early 40s.
But that
so confused.
No, I knew that scene was in the 50s because they're talking about the Soviets and the hydrogen bomb.
But I didn't. I was like, when is this? And you had to explain it to
but
me.
But what confused me about that scene was that we saw it in black and white, then they cut back to it in color. And I'm like, so wait. The black and white and color has nothing to do with time. And then we both realized, we think, correct us if we're wrong, listeners, that the black and white was Robert Downey Jr.'s perspective and color was Oppenheimer's perspective. Is that how you saw it, Kathy?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I couldn't quite capture what was happening. I found all the Robert Downey, until I realized that Robert Downey Jr. had been, and they did a bit of a like twist, for want of a better word. The twist.
Sorry,
is that
twist was a bit lame.
The twist
it was kind of obvious
had,
that he gave the documents. Go on, anyway.
Well, whatever way they were trying to, suddenly it was about his witch hunt and not Oppenheimer's, whatever. Until that happened, I was like, why are we spending so much time with Robert Downey Jr.? Like, I couldn't actually figure it out. I was confused every time he was on screen. So I think.
Morning.
I think I was glad when they explained to me why Robert Downey Jr. was getting so much screen presence. I enjoyed, like, I really enjoyed the kind of perspective of the witch hunt on Oppenheimer and then him answering for it later. But yeah, I was a little bit confused by the whole thing.
So what I hadn't known about was all of Oppenheimer's links to the Communist Party, and I found
fascinating.
So that was all fascinating, to have the McCarthy era analysis of his background and being discredited as the sort of core kind of conflict in this movie. And I thought all that was really interesting.
Such good storytelling as well, because we know the bomb's going to get built. So yeah, what is the core tension?
But can I say another way, to the way he uses visuals to express the passage of time really well, was that jar filling up with marbles.
Yeah.
You know, which we know that they, that is them reaching, you know, the time when they've got enough plutonium to detonate it. And you're just like, so there's a lot of just simple ways to communicate the story visually that I was so impressed by.
I always love anything around communism in the McCarthy era. It makes for such riveting TV and film, right? Because it's so fascinating that there was an actual witch hunt in like a modern day against people who had any associations or suggested associations with the Communist Party. And I found it really fascinating. One of the things I loved about the film was because it spanned from the 20s to like
The 50s.
It caught such a period of his life, and the fact that, yeah, in the 20s, why wouldn't he have dabbled in communism? And then how that can affect you later on in life is really fascinating. And it did make me question him, and people were like, we don't know Oppenheimer, we don't know what he stands for. You know, it could have actually been an element of him being a Russian sympathizer or whatever else in some of the choices he made later on in life. There also could have just been that scientific element of, well, we need to share knowledge because if the Russians know we've built this, then we can all just stop building worse weapons. I also believe that. Like, I like that we never really understood his true motivations. And some of the points the cross-examiner was making, like, well, you suddenly minded afterwards when Russia were going to be the target, but you didn't mind when Germany were going to be the target because you're Jewish and you didn't want Germans targeting Jews, but then you have sympathies to Russians, and like his own where his own politics were lying were very interesting. I love the stuff from when he was in the 20s and he was studying in Europe, and the fact that he obviously was like a genius who could pick up every language and whatever else, and he actually knew all the German scientists who were then going to be building the bomb.
Yes.
For Hitler, like he knew
Heisenberg, and
like he was the
Niles
most networked Bohr. Scientist ever because of his time spent in Europe. And at that time, it was such a new field of study, so there was only like a few brilliant minds working in it. So but, all that stuff is just,
but that's
so interesting.
But that's one of the core themes of this movie, is science versus politics. And we get, you know, we hear Josh Hartnett's playing that Professor Lawrence, you know, telling him time and time again, there's no room for politics in this university, right? Keep it off. You know, he's trying to unionize the professors, but it's a hypocrisy, because ultimately they get swallowed up by politics. They're working for the American government, right? That you cannot separate the two. And just to your point, before politics interferes, you have a worldwide network of scientists brought together by scientists, not by borders. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that those divisions are then inserted because of Germany and America and Russia and the national stage politics. And ultimately, that's the kind of decision that Oppenheimer has to make in the end, is that science is, and he makes the conscious decision to hand over science to the government, right? And that's kind of what he's saying in the hearing. You know, it's like, it wasn't my decision to make, I made a recommendation.
But it's,
you know,
also like, to Einstein's point though as well, is like, once you've done it, you can't undo it.
Yes.
Once you've added to the scientific
knowledge,
it's for
them now, it's not for you.
And it's also for them, and it's also for anyone can take your science and do whatever they want with it afterwards. And like, so he was very much the boss and the big man for a couple of years in managing the site and developing it all. And then I love how they showed us how basically impotent he was after that. Like, he couldn't even get his phone calls answered.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that. So he wanted to go back to having a position of power and influence. So that's very interesting as well. Also, total side note, that Oppenheimer is like a complete horn dog. Absolutely love that addition.
I wish we could get that on the poster.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that, and quite enjoyed it. I think this, like, there's kind of too much to talk about with it, and like we could talk about it for another 3 hours. But I'm just, like, what a day! Like, it was so, I can't believe we haven't gone back to back in the cinema since before we kids. Two such different movies that it was a brilliant thing.
Both, like, you could never so go, satisfying.
You could never go back to back on, like, two Marvel movies, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, they're so different, and I think that is what was so good about watching them back to back.
But they paired really well together.
They paired really well.
And, but I think they're both great examples of what cinema can provide.
Exactly.
And I don't just mean movies. I mean, like, they looked great on the big screen, both of them. They were... just entertaining and thought-provoking. They're both, they're so perfectly complemented.
Yeah.
And I love that the world just kind of got behind this scheduling conflict.
And like when we went to the bigger cinema, right, which is way more screens and stuff, to see Oppenheimer, the amount, because that's a huge shopping center, we went in to get food and like
Everyone was wearing pink, whole tables of people in pink,
male and female. It was so fun. Like, the whole cinema was talking to people wearing pink. There was definitely more people there to see Barbie than Oppenheimer, because interestingly, more of the Max screens had been handed over to Barbie than Oppenheimer. I think partially it's a programming thing, because Oppenheimer is so long, so you can get more money if you put the Barbies in, but also because of the demand, I'm guessing. So yeah, it was quite a buzz. I'm absolutely buzzing after a day yesterday. I can't believe, I'm glad we ended on Oppenheimer, actually. And funnily, I had thought of doing it the other way, because Barbie would be like the palate cleanser, because I was thinking that Oppenheimer could be a bit dull.
That would have been my choice as well, but...
But because Oppenheimer... Because I thought it might have been a bit dull or
Oppenheimer
intense.
Was exciting.
But exactly,
It was so exciting.
So, and because I sometimes have come out of a Christopher Nolan film like a bit cold, like a lot of the Dark Knight stuff, so I was thinking I'd need Barbie afterwards. But actually, I think Oppenheimer was the better second.
Yeah, I think it worked really well. Yeah. Barbie was a really good appetizer.
Now, I'm going to go and see Barbie again on Tuesday, so therefore Oppenheimer is actually the center of a Barbie sandwich for me. I'd love to see Oppenheimer again in like 10 years. I'd love it to get a cinematic re-release.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to watch it again.
Yeah, I can't ever imagine throwing this on at home.
No.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I've experienced it. but yeah, look, guys, let us know what you thought of Oppenheimer and Barbie. We are thecinemile@gmail.com if you want to email us, or at thecinemile on Twitter, Letterboxd, Instagram.
And come over to Patreon, where we review TV shows and movies. This month we are doing conspiracy theory movies, which our patrons are picking, which I can't wait, because love us conspiracy theory.
And yes, and we've just finished Silo Season 1 review.
Yeah.
And there's loads of good TV stuff.
And more, and just like that episode's coming for me.
You get about 45 old movie reviews up there as well.
Yeah. So anyway, tell us what you thought of Oppenheimer and Barbie. Can't wait to hear from everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Truman needs to know what's next.
Two.
What's next?
One.